Joining me now on this edition of Our Town is Court Boyce. He is running for governor for the state of Oregon. Court is currently a Curry County commissioner, and good day to you, Court. How are you?
Well, George, thanks very much for having me on, and I'm doing quite well. Thanks again.
So we spoke a while back. How many years ago was it now? You were, I believe you were running for Congress, weren't you?
Yes, and I appreciate getting, again, a chance to visit with you. And in those days, we had just survived somewhat, is the best way to characterize it, the Checo Bar in 2017 and the Klondike fires in 2018. And so my issue was, you guys are burning up my forest, and it's destroying Oregon. It's destroying our watersheds, our rivers, certainly our forest, and you know, our timber is the great Oregon advantage, the heritage. And so I got some attention, and the last 2 years we've lost, well, the first 2 years, those two combined fires, George, we lost over 330,000 acres. In the last three fire seasons, we've lost only about 300. So my relationship with the Forest Service in 17 and 18 wasn't too good. But it did start improving, and now I would say it's very good. They really get off on those fires and get them out. And the Oregon Department of Forestry is absolutely one of the best in the 14 Western United States.
So I was looking up and doing a little bit of reading there, and found this one article that kind of says, well, you know, I'm not really worried about whether I win or not. You just want to draw attention to rural counties. Is that totally accurate? I mean, what if you did win? I mean, is that certainly something that you are prepared for?
Oh, I'm ready to go. And I think after the debate in Josephine County Friday night, I stack up fine. There's some very good people there, some very qualified people. There's a stirring in Oregon, as you know, and people are saying, we better make some changes. One of my opening lines, George, is vote for Boyce. You won't have to move to Idaho. More and more good people leaving, and they refer to us as the left coast. Our education system is absolutely failing. There's no respect for law and order. There is drug cartels moving in southern Oregon. Of course, the Antifa in northern Oregon, and so goes Portland. So goes the rest of the state. So at 67, I feel like I've got to make a difference. I've got to speak out. Being a county commissioner, especially in a small county with limited staff, is very time consuming and intense. I'm good with that. But my biggest issue now is housing. I think it's time to repeal Senate Bill 100 from back in 1973. Who in the world isn't for wise planning? But when you tell people that you can't build your offspring a house 40 acres down the way, it's got to be changed. And from that, how are we going to get developer incentives to come to Oregon and help us solve this housing problem? We can do that without sacrificing agricultural land, certainly.
Well, you know, recently, well, within the last couple of years, we had a family here that had a large family estate with a lot of acreages. Originally, there were three or four houses on the property, and due to age and that had to be torn down, whatever. They went back to the state to say, we'd like to rebuild our family home and build a home for our kids on there. And they were pretty much told, no, you can't do it, even though you had 40 or 140 acres. And obviously, you are an advocate for rural communities like we are here, even though we're part of the bigger Lane County. The western Lane County area is smaller. Is that one of the things that you see as sort of an unfair balance of the use of property?
Well, it's also a lack of knowledge from the metro folks that, we grow food and we take care of the rest of Oregon. So the best stewards of the land are the people I've known my entire life. You know, I'll call them out. I feel like I'm morally obligated to do that. The radical environmentalists and their lawyers that have absolutely put us in this horrible situation. And I brought this up again Friday night that, just one issue, and I'll come back to the housing part of it. But when we have burned timber salvage or burned timber from these wind-driven 2,000-degree fires. The way the system is set up now, because of the environmental regulations, that timber cannot be harvested without tremendous planting. Well, it goes rotten, of course, as you know, within a year and a half to 2 years. And those are taxpayer assets, incredibly valuable, that are left to rot. And, you know, that affects our schools, that affects our public safety, our roads, all of that. And so that's why they're doubling down on that system. They've been manipulating the Oregonian population for 40 years. And we've proved that their system does not work. And it's just indescribable waste. And the county commissioners at all counties, pretty much, I think, agree with that this system has got to be reversed, because nobody on the planet grows higher quality, faster growing trees than Oregon. And this advantage, we just can't waste that or squander that anymore. So again, when it comes to housing, people have private property rights, and you know, all the people I know are the good stewards. I mean, they want to protect the land. They want to do the right thing. But to say they can't build a home when it's totally logical and a common sense approach, that's got to be changed.
So you use the term radical environmentalist like we use the term radical Democrat or radical Republican. Obviously, there are Republicans, Democrats, and environmentalists that are not maybe considered radicalized. Where do you feel the place is for environmentalism? I mean, a lot of the loggers will tell you they are probably some of the prime environmentalists when it comes to, you know, making sure our forests stay green and replanting and stuff like that. But where do you see the role for just environmental issues is in Oregon?
You know, I raised my family, George, in the Rogue River Wilderness, no roads. Everything had to go to Lodge, Paradise Lodge, by boat. So nobody that knows me would ever be convinced that I'm not sold out to take care of our forest, our watersheds, our fish. I'm working continually on fish issues. I may come back to that a little bit later on. It's a small percentage of the, I mean, you can label them however you want. You know, some say, you know, just lacking common sense preservationists, they would rather see a tree burn than let it burn for our system. This is a beautiful, renewable timber garden that has to be managed. And I've seen in my lifetime, time and time again, I mean, I watched in my 20s when the spotted owl came in. I mean, I was watching that and studying that before the spotted owl was invented. And now it's the red tree vole, and they're locking up private property. Some of our timber companies are moving out of Oregon, and it's just staggering. They're moving to the south, and with that goes good family wage earning jobs, healthy forests, healthy communities. That's just not a tricky or a trendy slogan. That's the truth of again, our heritage. So the radical approach we have proved through common sense and empirical evidence just doesn't work. You have to remove fuel. And I would start, George, obviously, every road, 200 feet, make it look like a park. You don't have to cut down trees. You just have to get the volatile ground fuels, the ladder fuels that even kill old growth. There's no sense in this. And so, yeah, I'm a little bit passionate about it. I've seen the evidence. It's been, again, in my county, of six major fires we've had in the last 30 years, this is no exaggeration, has cost over $300 million to fight. And those, if you would just give me 1% of that, $3 million, and let me get kids out here to teach them how to run a chainsaw, teach them how to, about fire prevention. You know, we have to first understand there is good fire out there. There is natural fire that burns 1,200 degrees instead of, again, these 2,000 degrees that just incinerate, cook everything. Our wildlife and birds can generally get away from a normal fire, but their instincts just can't preserve them enough to tell them, okay, where do I go in this kind of a fire? And Curry County is just a perfect example of that. So I hope I answered your question there and made good sense.
Now, of course, you know, the fire and the logging is one thing. The housing is another. You mentioned early on when we started talking about how there are certain groups, whether it's cartels or whatever, moving in here. They're doing illegal operations, illegal growing operations in the southern part of the state. They're finding these huge caches of illegally grown marijuana to be distributed in that. I mean, obviously, this is a cash business now for a lot of folks in here. How do we call out those groups that are doing this illegally? What do you see as far as would be the governor's responsibility to say, hey, look, you know, we can't tolerate this?
Well, you just said it. The governor has a responsibility. I would immediately double the size of the state police. Highest recruited, highest standards, highest paid. Bring back respect for those men and women that are sold out for public safety, our public safety professionals. Anybody that thinks that we can't fight the, what did they call in the summer of 2020? They called it the summer of love, when there was unbelievable destruction. People have general, in a general sense, have no idea what our people put up with, that went into the city of Portland and tried to preserve peace, tried to preserve the entire movement that has done nothing but hurt the common citizen. And so back to your point, yeah, we have to fight this with everything we got, or we will lose before we even get started. And, you know, at my age, I have a nice spot on the river. I could retire and just back off. You know, my grandfather was the longest serving Curry County commissioner of all time in 1930 to 1948. And my dad was the famous sheriff here of the 60s and 70s. They could care less what their paycheck amounted to every month. What they cared about is good neighborhoods, people helping people, and good schools, working hard, and all the traditions and values and virtues that that made America great. And so we just can't walk off and give that up. And I won't. And I know a lot of people that feel the same way.
Well, you know, it sounds a lot like when you were talking earlier about the forest and, you know, spending costing us $300 million to fight them versus, you know, $3 to even $10 million up front would be a savings. And I guess with the idea of building the state police, with reinforcing our law enforcement, it might cost a little bit of money up front, but perhaps it will save us a lot of money in the end or overall. What do we use to pay for that now?
Well, I'm glad you asked that too. You know, there's been 40 years of absolute, almost immoral lack of financial discipline in your state. I'll give you one example. On the homeless issue, $400 million and it was somewhat bipartisan. I guess I could use that term cautiously. But for the 16,000 people we have in Oregon that are homeless, and I'm not opposed to trying to help those people get a medical, mental health care, get them, find out who wants to work, who doesn't. You know, I've got an attitude there about, if you want to eat, you got to work and clean up your mess. At least start there. But of those 16,000 and a $400 million approach, George, that's, $28,000 per individual. So to me, that's another horrific example. And I know that's a strong word, but let's say terrible example of poor funding priorities. So I don't think our state police has ever been funded properly. I can assure you we don't have good numbers because we have the same number we had back in the 70s. It should be a source of pride for us. It should be just like our nine forest protective associations through the Oregon Department of Forestry. It should be the best in the West. And I'm not saying we're holding them back, but I say we are distracted in this state by continual bad decisions and bad policies that are exposing our people, our citizens, to unnecessary risk. And it's just not hard to it's a common sense approach, and we know we have history on our side that can show us the good and the bad of you know, good and bad decisions.
I'm speaking with Court Boyce. He is running for the governor seat here in Oregon. Court, if you would, give me your elevator speech and we'll finish it up with that.
Well, thank you again. You know, I'd like to be as authentic as I possibly can be. It means so much to me when talking to people, and I have people's skills. So, by the way, George, when I say authentic, I mean as authentic as Hunter Biden's laptop. You know, it's I've had a little fun with that line, but there's some connection there. Sure, I ran for Congress, now I'm running for governor. I'm running for the right reasons. I feel like people can trust me. I have that reputation. Nobody's going to outwork me. Nobody's going to care more. I was born in Gold Beach. I know Oregon. I will fight for everything I believe in, everything that you love. Nobody's going to beat me, George, on catastrophic wildfire prevention. Nobody's going to beat me on natural resources. Nobody's going to beat me on veterans issues, the environment. You know, and this housing is my number one issue after fire or with fire. I'm very strong in the Constitution. I'm pro-gun, pro-God, pro-family, pro-law enforcement, pro-Oregon. So people know, and everybody wants to race to see who's the most conservative. And, you know, I do that with honor and respect. I can talk to anyone as long as they're sworn to anti-violence, those principles. I hope that didn't talk too long.
No, that's fine. Court Boyce, thank you so much for your time, and good luck on May 17th. Next up on the May edition of Our Town, we'll talk Rhododendron Festival with Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Bettina Hannigan.